74% of Pacific Islanders, 56% of Māori feel unconfident or unsure when making financial decisions. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
How deep do you want to go here? We were colonised. We had an economic system imposed on us. And what we value is inherently different than our capitalistic society.
Kendall Flutie, the co-founder and co-CEO of the financial education platform Banker. Banker is on a mission to prepare the next generation for their financial future and has already helped educate over 300,000 students in New Zealand and Australia.
So I'm not surprised by those statistics. It's devastating that that's the case.
Yep.
I hope we can see some change in the next few years because we should be super confident because we effort. We've navigated things far more challenging than a little financial system.
That's right.
And all we need is the self-belief to come along with our capabilities. Money isn't as scary as you think it may be, and there's a lot of tools out there to learn about money. Biggest barrier to getting better with money is...
This is the Fresh Money Podcast.
74% of Pacifica, 56% of Māori feel unconfident or unsure when making financial decisions. This podcast is all about opening up the conversation of money and to help everyone get better at it. So if you can please like and subscribe, it's our promise to interview more people who can help and inspire you to become better with money. Please note that this podcast does not constitute financial advice. If you are needing financial advice, please consult a professional or get in touch and we can point you in the right direction. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Welcome to Fresh Money Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm super stoked to have you here. So why don't we start with you telling us a bit about yourself and then what you do at Banker and what is Banker?
Totally. Let's do it. Well, ko Kendall Flutie tōku ingoa, ngō Ngāi Tahu, ngō Ngāti Kahu Nunu Hōki, nō o Tautahi Aho, me koe te kaihanga o Banker. So I'm Kendall. I'm born and bred here in Ōtautahi. Really proud of that. Love it here. It's home. I reckon it's going to be home forever, which is cool. Whakapapa here and up north as well in Pirinoa. And yeah, I'm the co-founder, co-CEO of Banker, which is a financial education company. We basically teach kids about money using technology, our software.
Awesome, awesome. How long has that been going for?
It's going to be a decade, so 10 years this October. Yeah, it's a real milestone.
I know. Sheesh. That's amazing.
It is. It's gone really quickly, but also there were times where it went really slowly.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And are you guys in all schools or in some schools or most schools?
All schools is the goal, for sure. Yep. All schools in Kura. At this stage, we're in around 60% of our primary schools in Kura Kaupapa. And in about 40% of our secondary schools, we're a bit slower to get to our secondary schools. We just launched a new product around 3-4 years ago amidst COVID that was specifically for secondary schools.
Cool. Yeah. And is there a cost to Banker?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
So we work with our EPIC partners, our main one being our champion KiwiBank.
Yeah, wow.
And they make it completely free for primary schools, which is huge because the last thing we want to do is for costs to be a barrier to learning about money.
Yes.
It just feels really perverse.
Yeah.
And primary schools don't really have the budget specifically for that learning.
Okay.
But high schools, they pay a little bit of putia to access it, and usually they can throw it into the commerce budget or social sciences budget or something like that. Yeah.
Awesome. When I did my kind of research on Banker,
you
guys cover so many subjects. When I was looking through, I was like, man, where was this? I'm older now. Where was this when I was at school? I studied economics at school and I got it. I loved it because I was wanting to understand how it all worked. But it was economics at high school was too macro. It was too big. It focused on the, inflation, all those big kind of concepts which did affect me indirectly, but what I needed was those micro kind of skills, what were the products, what did they mean, what was an overdraft credit card, which you guys do. What kind of products do you talk about in a Banker, or can you elaborate on all the details?
Man, that whakaaro really resonates with me. I did economics as well. I loved it. I really fizzed over it. And I did a little bit of accounting. It didn't really spin my wheels as much.
Yeah.
But I agree, like, that real practical knowledge is what I was craving, stuff that I could then go out and put into practice and, you know, make my life better, make those the lives of those I love better.
Yeah,
so cool. It's been a real, like, real privilege and a real joy to be able to build that for my past self, you know.
Yeah, nice.
The kind of things we cover, just the basics, the stuff we all need to know to survive and then thrive. Mm. So different bank account options, like a notice saver account, what is that? Like term deposits, we do insurance, so managing your risk, which is something that I don't think a lot of us proactively think about until stuff kind of goes wrong. Yeah. I can relate to that. We do investing, which is pretty cool for our rangatahi these days, especially with like shares.
Yeah, is there a lot of interest in that?
100%. It's one of our most popular features in the platform. And then we do some other basics like paying tax. The students don't love that
one. But it's one of the certainties in life, isn't it?
It's not going anywhere, is it? So you might as well understand, like, knowledge is power.
That's right.
And then, yeah, just a ton more of the financial concepts that I think you and I would use every day.
Yeah.
But largely, we only learned about them through trial and error.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. And what kind of business is Banker? Is it like a fintech, like a financial technology company?
Yeah. We'd sort of say, depending on what room we're in, we'd say we're an edtech, education technology company, or a fintech.
Okay.
Because financial technology company.
Yep.
Because we're essentially a blend of the two. Like, we are a fake economy. We're like a fake bank, a fake IRD, a fake insurer, and it's all this financial playground. So we've got some systems in our tech that like are better than bank systems. Like the amount of cash we put through our economy, the Banker economy last year was bigger than all New Zealand's banks' transactions.
No way.
So it's like big, but it's fake money. You know, it doesn't really count.
Yes, true.
But then we're also a learning platform. Yeah, I wish, imagine. Yeah. We're also a learning platform, so we've got like curriculum alignment. So that's where the whole edtech thing comes in. But regardless of what room we're in, we say we're an impact business. We're a certified B Corp as well, which is like kind of as close as you can get to being, an approved for-purpose impact business. Yeah, but the fintech edtech debate is still going.
Okay, nice,
yeah.
Awesome. The government launched like last year, or they announced that financial education was going to be compulsory in primary schools. Is that still happening?
We're keeping our foot on the accelerator there.
Okay.
It wasn't in the 100-day plan, which was really disappointing.
Mm. Yeah, I kept an eye out for it.
I
couldn't see anything.
And they've done some, like there was some stuff to do with schools in that plan around like the basics, like reading and writing and stuff. So it's not one of their top priorities, I guess, was my read on that.
Okay.
But we've been talking to like Minister's Office and some other players just to make sure it doesn't fall off that roadmap.
Yep.
I think we do have a huge opportunity. We'd be one of few countries in the whole world if we made it compulsory.
Yeah.
And those countries that did make it compulsory saw like epic outcomes for whānau.
Wow.
They saw like real world financial outcomes in the years that followed that compulsion in school. So yeah, we're not going to let it die.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Because I think it's so much better to have that knowledge in the beginning as opposed to it trying to like an ambulance at the bottom of the hill, trying to fix it at the end. It's like, you're creating that solution before there even is a problem, I suppose.
That's it. And that's our whole philosophy. Like, how can we preventatively educate people? Yep. Because we'd rather they didn't go through the pain.
Mm.
And it's pretty normal. Like, most other things we learn, you're not expected to know how to do them beforehand. So,
that's right.
Yeah, hopefully we can just normalise the fact that you should learn about money in a structured, formal way as part of your upbringing.
Yeah, awesome. Mm. If it was... What does that mean for you guys as a business?
We're ready.
Yeah,
nice. I hope we'd be a big part of the solution, but at the same time, we may not be the right solution for everyone, and that's cool too. But yeah, we're geared up. The team's always like, I've got a little bit of capacity to go if we need to.
Wicked.
But the cool thing is, like being tech, we can scale pretty quickly. Like if we got 10,000 people on, another 100,000 people on, it's probably all good. We can do that. So we're just kind of needing a bit of directive from the government to help schools unlock their resources so they can actually put some manpower to this.
Yeah, mean. take me back to where it all began, really. The bank story, like, where did the idea originate?
Yeah, I've got to give credit to my little brother for the idea. Yeah, as much as it pains me. I love him, but he's just already the family favourite.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was an accountant for a little bit.
Okay.
Wasn't my jam. Yeah. And so I retrained in software development and I was working. Oh, yeah.
It's quite different.
It is a... Yeah, I kind of... I shouldn't... Well, I don't regret being an accountant because it was great perspective and like a lot of good learnings. But it just wasn't my jam. Mm. Like, I think being a creative accountant is a bad thing. You need to be like quite, you know, rules and numbers based. But software development was a way that I could explore my interest in business without needing to be like an accountant or anything. Yeah.
What made you, because you were heading down the accountant to be a chartered accountant.
Yeah.
How far in through those studies were you?
So I'd done all my studies at uni and I landed.
You'd completed it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was right in there.
Wow.
Well, it was interesting. I actually studied economics as like my major at uni. And I don't know, I didn't put enough thought into the whole thing. Yeah. I felt like I should go to uni because, like, that was sort of my measure of success at the time.
Gotcha.
Whether that's right or wrong. And it was like it was a cool thing for our whānau as well. So I was wanting to carry that. But I finished my economics thing and didn't really know what jobs that could lead to.
Yes. Yep.
And so then I tacked on a little bit of accounting. I was like, oh, I'll become an accountant. It was quite a linear path. So, yeah, I probably didn't know myself well enough before I committed to that.
Yeah.
But I was... 3 weeks in when I knew it was wrong for me.
3 weeks into
the job.
So you had a...
I had a job.
You'd signed an employment contract?
Yeah, like done all the adult things.
Yeah, wowzers.
And I'd moved up to Wellington as well for it. So that was quite a big deal.
Yeah. So, like, in my banking career, you know, I've met a lot of career bankers, you know, people who have worked in banking for a long time. For most of their careers, really, and that's all good, right? Like that's all good, but a lot of them have said to me, you know, if I did have this interest early on, I kind of wish I potentially could have shifted them and pivoted careers, and did that. A lot of people think that, but not many people do it. What made you do it? Yeah,
I was just really unhappy. Like, and I act on, when I'm unhappy, I act on it. And I'm really not afraid of quitting things.
Yeah,
like, I know there's, like, I used to play a lot of sports. Like, at school, sports was my main thing.
Yeah, nice.
So, like, quitting was drilled into me to be a bad thing in some senses.
Mm.
But also because I liked so many sports, I had to know how I could, like, say no to things so I could say yes to the real thing. And so I kind of applied that same philosophy. This was a big no, and I could just sit through the pain and the unhappiness and just pretend like it's a yes, or I could say no to it and hope that a big yes came along. But it was scary as
heck. Yeah.
Like, it was real. Like, I felt like classic, felt like a failure, all those things.
Yeah.
Had invested a lot in my education and was going to be unemployed and all the risks that come with that. But yet, funnily enough, it was one day in the office that I like looked up at my buddy who was paired with me to... I was pretty useless. I was a few weeks in. And I looked at him and I was like, man, I didn't say this to him. Hopefully it was all internal dialogue. I was like, I don't really want to be you next year. And then I looked at my manager and I was like, I don't like have aspirations to be you. And obviously it wasn't a personal thing like against them, but that just didn't feel like my future.
Yeah,
and then the bill came along to do my chartered accountancy. We're like a few months in now. And that was the like... impetus that I needed to say, like, nope, I ain't paying that bill, so I gotta make a call here.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Good on you.
So I quit. Yeah.
Wowzers.
And thankfully during that time of unhappiness I'd figured out what might make me happy.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been like cruising around different places in Wellington, talking to heaps of people, and it definitely landed on tech being my interest area.
What kind of period what years were that when you were you
2013 was the year of turbulence. Yeah.
nice.
Yeah.
Because Wellington was very much the scene at the time. There's the tech
it
kind
was.
Of
hub. 100%. Yeah. Like Xero was still pretty young.
Yeah. Yep.
And Trade Me was there as well. And PowerShop was pumping out some cool electricity tech. like their framework and tools. So there was a lot going on, and it was really fortunate to be there then at that time of uncertainty. Yeah.
Awesome.
How did that look like a banker, right? Yeah. So I retrain. I do like, I'm not going to go back to university. Don't have the cash, but also felt like I didn't have the time.
Yeah.
I don't know, rightly or wrongly, I kind of felt like I was behind a little bit now.
Gotcha.
So I did this like 12-week course in person. It was their first time they'd run students through it.
Mm.
It worked. It was really practical. So I was pretty light on some of the programming theory.
Okay.
But I knew how to spin up a website or spin up an app.
Yeah, nice.
I met some awesome people through that. And then I landed a job, like, literally the next week. We were all very employable because we were hands-on. Unlike software grads who come out of, it may be different now, but back then, a four-year degree, you can come out slightly light on practical.
Okay.
But we could be thrown on client work straight away. So landed a sick job, and then I wanted to come home just to reconnect with whānau and, you know, all that stuff. So came home for a long weekend, and that is when my younger brother, my youngest brother, I was early 20s, he's 12 years old, he blew me away, because all we'd usually talk about is the Crusaders, the Black Caps, or John Cena, like, and he'd have me with all the wrestling moves.
That's awesome.
But this time he asked me some curly questions about, like, investment strategies, employment structures, and progressive tax systems. Legit, he used those words.
How old?
12. 12. I know we were talking about kids and our loved ones earlier. That's weird, eh, for a 12-year-old?
That's
not
the norm, is it?
Yeah. Well, hopefully, increasingly, it's more becoming the norm. Yeah. But back, definitely in my life back then, that wasn't normal.
So where did that?
Yeah, I picked into that a bit. His teacher was running some financial literacy stuff in his class.
Okay.
But it was like on steroids. It wasn't just lessons about money. He'd printed out all this fake cash. They had their own classroom economy. They were paying tax. So he wasn't happy about it. So he wanted to talk about this thing. Because the more he was earning, he felt like the more he was getting. And he had started a company. He was the chair stacker. So every morning he bring the chairs down for the cleaners come in and do their thing, and then he'd have to put the chairs up at the end of the night. So he wanted to hire his best mate because he was sick of doing the work. So he wanted to know if he should be a contractor or an employee. And then he wanted to know what to do with his money to grow it. So we had an awesome quarter that evening. And then so there was a series of events that led to Banker. Like, I caught up with his teacher. Yep. I didn't know him, but I was like, this dude's obviously awesome. We agreed that we could work on something together to create for his class, for my brother. And then I built that in a weekend with some mates, because that's the cool thing about software dev. You can bring an idea to life super quick.
True.
And then over the next month or so, one of my now co-founders, my brother's old teacher, he started telling people about this website that we've built just for him. And suddenly, like, heaps of people are emailing me with support requests and, like, can you come to my school? And I was like, man, I'm just a software developer. And 10 years later, I guess we got more intentional about it, and here we are.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because when you go through, like, an incubator or, you know, those places where ideas and things like that are tested out, it's almost as if you kind of did it yourselves, right? You kind of created this kind of a, what do you call it, a demo or something like that, a bit of a landing page, and then you kind of got more interest, and the interest, the data for it kind of spoke for itself. There was a need.
It's that demand was really organic, at least at the start. Like, we definitely have hit some thresholds where we've had to spin the, you know, the marketing up or whatever it may be, just have better access to the communities you want to engage with. But, yeah, at the start it was really organic, and that's what led me. I think it took 6 months since built that in that weekend to when I then had to quit my job as a software developer to go full-time on Banker. Wow. Yeah.
And so what did you do then? Did you hire?
No, we had no money.
Okay. I was going to say.
No money. And not really a plan to make much more. Like, we just had this awesome product with people using it.
Yep. That people wanted.
Yeah.
And then what? What next? Who'd you talk to next, or who'd you bring on?
We had to backfill a lot of that, like, business strategy stuff.
Gotcha.
Which now is obviously we lead with business strategy. Yes. But back then it was like we were leading with a cool idea and a product and demand. So we figured some of that stuff out. We definitely had heaps of cool advisors.
Oh, nice.
Like just peeps I'd met through when I was figuring out what I wanted to be.
Yep.
It's really interesting. Like the more you ask people for help, the more they want to help you.
True.
And they would want to catch up for coffee and then they would introduce me to someone else. And so just that classic networking stuff really, which I don't love, but I think if you go into it with intent and purpose and really authentically, it's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then we figured out a business model that was going to work.
Okay.
We started out charging schools in Kura in primary. We were just focused in primary. $2 per student per term, so $8 a year per student, which seems okay.
Yeah.
And the economics were sustainable for our business over, you know, if we get big enough.
Yeah.
But then we started finding that some of our existing schools couldn't use it, even at that price. They just didn't have the budget for it, or they had other priorities, financial priorities, which I totally get. Like, I'd go and talk to these schools for a while to really understand. And that kind of resulted in us having this skew to higher socioeconomic areas, which is a problem we need to solve because we didn't want to make the financial inequities issue worse.
Yes, I was going to ask, like, is it available in all this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we were starting to see this negative, well, perverse trend. And so that's when we went back to the drawing board and were like, well, if we can't charge every single person, how else can we make a sustainable business? And that's when we started talking about partners and partnerships. And we actually had like this big Australasian partner in the wings who was really keen on working with us. But the values alignment wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
And at the same time, KiwiBank had just been like, when I say KiwiBank, it was people. People at KiwiBank.
Yes.
Yep. Had been offering us support and just interest in what we were doing.
Yeah, awesome.
And I sort of mentioned this problem we had to them and they were like, well, come in, we'll see what we can do. And that partnership's been going for like year nine of the 10 years now.
Wowzers.
And so that made it completely free and that started our pathway towards business sustainability and scalability.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we started to hire people, but it was like...
So how long was it just
18 months, me and one of the people from the weekend.
Okay.
So one of my co-founders, he jumped ship as well.
Yeah, wow.
But our other co-founders stayed in, so my brother's teacher, he said he'd always be a teacher and I can totally understand that. It's his jam.
True.
He had just moonlight for us. And then one of our other co-founders just needed that stability of full-time gig. And I totally get that. Me and Ben were probably the risky ones who jumped into it.
We're going all in.
Yeah. So I reckon 2 years until we could hire someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. And then obviously once you hire, you have to make sure that you can keep paying those hires. Did you bring on, obviously you had the partnership with KiwiBank.
Mm-hmm.
What did that allow you to pay yourselves for a period of time, or did you have to bring on investors? Or
yeah, so it allowed us to pay ourselves like at cost. So I think I wasn't earning anything. Thank goodness, my then boyfriend, now husband, who's an accountant. So it's good to have some stability. You know, balances us out.
Yeah.
So I wasn't earning anything for maybe like a year or something like that. Any money, like even from KiwiBank that we got, would go into growing and those good things. And then maybe my salary was like 20K or something like that. Mm. And then maybe the next year it was 40, and then the next year a little bit more, to the point where I'm not quite at like full market salary, but it's always the goal to get there. Otherwise, we also keep growing our revenue as well. So we introduced other partners.
Okay.
Support partners. We now work with like Equifax and Partners Life.
Oh, nice.
So often peeps in the financial services space that get it.
Yep.
They understand the problem and they want an interesting, effective solution. But yeah, in terms of money and cash flow, it's always a grind. We bootstrapped, so we didn't take on investment money intentionally. The first time we raised was in 2022, the end of 2022. But for like 7 years of our journey, we were self-funded.
Wow.
And it's not like us tipping buckets of money in of our own personal money because we didn't have that.
Mm.
It was figuring out a way to make this thing viable like early on.
Cool.
And then only using the profits or proceeds to grow. Like everything just went back into it.
Wow. So everything reinvested.
100%.
Yeah. Wow.
Which, I mean, It'd be nice to pay out dividends. I'm sure all my shareholders would love some dividends. Yep. But really we get that we're on a mission, and our mission is to prepare the next generation, so everyone, all of our rangatahi, for their financial future.
Cool.
And the faster we can do that, the better the outcomes for that next generation. So awesome. We're happy to tip all that putia back into the business.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Would you guys get investors?
So the reason we didn't early on was kind of, I didn't know heaps about investors, but when I had engaged with investors, it felt like we weren't like kind of super aligned around the business objectives.
Yep.
They were maybe back then, and so 2014, they were very profit oriented.
Yep.
And some of the decisions we made wouldn't have made them happy, and what they wanted didn't make us happy. And since then, the Māori economy has come a really long way, and so to have impacted investors. So when we took on capital with investors in 2022, like majority of our cap table of investors are Māori, which is super cool. Wow. So immediately, like,
that's epic.
It is. I know where values aligned, but I also know they're not going to like suffer fools as well. They're going to push us commercially.
That's right.
And they've done epic things themselves, but they get that there are trade-offs to be made along the way because we're talking intergenerational change here.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Sheesh, what did you have to obviously pitch for that investment? Is that tricky?
It's real tricky. Yeah, I'd obviously never done it before. It was all of the emotions, like stressful, awkward, fun, exciting. I learned so much. I made so many mistakes.
Yeah.
I just tried to not make the same mistake twice, you know, always happy to make a new mistake. Pretty quickly, you could tell, like, I reckon we had like over 100 meetings with investors.
Wow.
Pretty quickly in each meeting, you could tell who were your peeps and who weren't.
Okay.
And the cool thing about investors.
Well, how could you tell that? Or was it something you learned over each meeting? You'd get better and better and what were the signs that you saw?
Definitely. So some just classic social cues, like when you're in a corridor with someone and they're just trying to wrap you quickly. Like they aggressively protect their time. So if they feel like it's not a misfit, they'll wrap it. I was wrapped up in a meeting after like 10 minutes once.
Yeah, wow.
Which you could say is rude, but you could also say is like actually really generous because not wasting each other's time.
Yes, true.
Some of the other things, one of the other big, like, obvious tells was the kinds of questions they'd ask you. So if they were asking me questions like, how are you going to get to be a $1 billion company in 3 years?
Yep.
It's like, you probably don't get us.
Yes.
We do have, we're commercially really ambitious, but we're not looking to take every shortcut we can to maximize profit.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty common recurring theme. Like, especially with the big VCs, because they've raised money and all of their investors.
Yeah, because they've got money from somewhere.
Exactly.
And they're trying to get a return for those people they got the money from.
Totally. Is that right? Yeah. Totally right. And, like, this sounds stupid, but I didn't really realize it. I thought, like, you could sell anyone on any vision and any dream because I'm so wholeheartedly invested in this thing. But it's not true. Like, there's a right investor for every company.
Cool.
And so now when we raise capital again, I'll actually be a lot more intentional about who I approach in respect of their time, but also our time.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Throughout that whole kind of growth period, what was you've had heaps of challenges, I'm sure you've had many. What was the biggest one?
I think one thing that I always find tricky is growing the team and growing, like literally growing the team, growing people. I'm not like one of those classic entrepreneur overt leaders who's like rah rah at the front, like that sort of stuff. It's not really my style, but I'm really invested in our team and their development. And I think sometimes, like, I've had to learn how to strike the right balance, not over investing, making sure I'm making tough decisions around people as well when I have to. And also learning to hire the right people because working for a startup is weird and different. It's very different to like my accounting days or even my software dev days. So I think the biggest challenges for me have been that keeping up with the pace of professional development I've needed to grow a scaling team at the same time. Because we're now like 18 peeps.
Yeah.
It's very different to when we were that, you know, one employee.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of that, I suppose that question kind of leads on to what ways have you had to grow, like the most, as the, you know, the business or as banker, you know, you started, it was quite different, or looked quite different in the start than it does now. How have you had to change from the start to now?
In every way. I mean, I'm like, I love learning. I do a lot of, like, structured professional development now. For the first, like, 4 or 5 years, I was sort of just winging it, going with the flow.
Cool.
Whatever the business needed, I just do. Now I'm really intentional about, like, my time. And some key things I've had to intentionally grow in are confidence levels. I like, believe in myself, don't get me wrong. But to put your stake in the ground and get others to believe in that as well is totally different to believing in yourself.
Okay.
So that's been a big growth area for me. Patience. I'm like, I historically just want to get things done as fast as possible, and that suits a startup. But some things take time. True. Like intergenerational change takes time inherently. So that's been a really big area for me. And the last thing has been ambition. I could have never believed that we would do what we do today if I rerun the clock. When we had our 100th school, we had a big party.
Wow.
You know, now we've got thousands and thousands of schools. But all the time I just need to keep extending my ambition to a level that's comfortable with me and my values and what I'm trying to achieve.
Yep.
But that's one that can sneak up on you pretty quickly, I found, if I'm not really intentional with declaring that level of ambition that I'm striving for.
Sweet. Awesome. Co-CEO. What does that mean, and how do you make those crucial decisions? Like, do you flip a coin, or is it rock, paper, scissors?
That's so valid. Yeah, I love co-leadership. I was the CEO of Banker, the sole CEO, for the first 4 years. So I've done more time co-leadership now than I have singular leadership. It's pretty lonely, and I know people say that, but to put a bit of color on that, like, regardless of how big or small your company is, you feel the weight of payroll going out every month or not going out. And there have been some months where we have had to, like, shoot, just cancel my part of the payroll and we'll talk to that person. And, you know, in the early days, it can get dicey.
Juggle it or jiggle it, rejig.
100%. There's a lot of weight on the calls that feel really big when it's just you and you don't necessarily know who you can talk to, who knows the business that intimately. But also has the expertise you need and a different perspective. So I've loved co-leadership. We have pretty clear, for a bit more insight, my co-CEO is also my husband.
Ah, okay, cool.
Which, like, can things get any messier?
Is that good or is that not so good?
It was not so good for the first year, I reckon.
Okay.
There was some really big learning curves for both of us and teething issues. Mostly, to be honest, around communication.
Okay.
And, we sorted that out. And then
how did you sort that out?
Through, like, just stuffing up heaps.
Okay.
Stuffing up heaps and then getting to a breaking point and asking ourselves, what do we value here and what do we want to try and salvage?
Yep.
And it's like, number one, the relationship, like our personal relationship.
Yep.
But after that, we're like, no, when we're on, we're on. We work really well together in the business and we've got really complementary skill sets. I'm like big on ideas. And I'm creative, and my co-CEO and husband is just, he can get stuff done. Nice. Like, he's an operations, like, legend. I'll come up with the most crazy things. He'll drag my optimism to a place of realism. So, like, it's a really well-matched pairing.
Yeah, it sounds quite balanced.
It is.
Like, your skills are kind of work and the other person's weaknesses, I suppose.
100%, so we figured that was worth saving as well. So we just had to figure out a structure that worked for us. So like a really simple rule for us is when we're home, this sounds stupid, but don't talk about work unless you've pre-agreed that you will.
Gotcha.
Because we were sitting up at like 11 o'clock at night just spinning on these issues that were small. That makes
real good sense because I was going to say, like, is there this work-life balance that you have to try and put a line in the sand so it doesn't kind of cross over, and each one doesn't inhibit the other.
That's it. There is. And it doesn't mean that we never talk about work at home. Mm. That's not, that's far from the truth. But we just know that if someone's relaxing, enjoying their time, they're switched off, they're in a different mode of being, then I'm not going to just project work into that mix for them. Yeah, and we have really clear responsibilities at work. So I oversee like product.
I see. Cool.
And our primary school space. And he leads revenue gen and marketing and those sorts of things. So, yeah, sometimes we won't even talk to each other at the office, which sounds weird, but...
But then it's kind of normal because a lot of people, when they go to work, they don't...
That's true. Talk to their spouses.
You're like, oh, where are you? I'm just at work.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's you guys at work. Could be in different rooms.
100%, yeah. But it's a real, like, if I could rewind the clock knowing everything I know now, I would 100% do it again. It's been so awesome doing it together. Mate,
that's awesome. Let's jump into your personal finances.
Let's do it.
I want to see if you practice what you preach, so to speak. Who handles the money in your house? Mm. Is it a joint thing, or is it one over the other, or does someone have a preference to, I prefer to handle it? Or
it's 100% a joint thing.
Cool.
And I'm a real strong advocate for it being a joint thing because if we're, like, ideally, well, my vision of couples and whānau that I know, we have joint aspirations and dreams. They don't just belong to one person.
Yeah.
And money isn't everything, but it's a tool to help us attain our aspirations and dreams.
Yeah.
So if we're both on the same page about the vision, we've both got to be on the same page about how we're going to get there and those little micro commitments that we make.
Okay.
That said, I'm probably the most pedantic person about our finances. Oh. So if we have a down month, like if our budget isn't quite where we thought it would be.
So you have a budget?
Yeah, 100%.
Sweet.
If we have a down month, I'll be like, all right, get out your app. Like, we're going line by line here. And it's not like a witch hunt or anything, but it's like, what did we overlook? How can we improve the next time?
Nice. Yeah. Wicked.
Yeah, it's real fun. I am really into money. Like, cool. I have kind of built my dream job. So that naturally flows into personal finance management too.
And growing up, did you guys, like your parents and your husband's parents talk about money? Because a lot of, you know, advice we get is from our parents, whether it be good or bad advice, really. And we just kind of keep going with what we know of what our parents.
So true. Yeah. Money was definitely talked about. For my personal upbringing, I sort of had a tale of two halves.
Okay.
So we were, mum was from my, I was two, my parents split up and mum was solo parenting. And like we never went without anything, but I knew about the concept of money very early because I was being told no and it was being explained why.
Mm.
And always got like, I got to give, like, I've ultimate respect for mum because we always had exactly what we needed, but we didn't always get what we wanted, which gave me a massive appreciation for like the value of money as well.
Yep.
And some of the things you've got to do when money's tight.
Yep.
And then when I was older, my stepdad came along and the financial pressure just released. And not to say we got everything we wanted by any means, but it was really interesting because he was into investing, for example, and suddenly all of my conversation went from like sort of this corridor around not having enough and needing to be really thrifty with money and why we couldn't do things and like what lay-by was and those sorts of things to what could we do with surplus? How do we make money work for us? So I was super privileged the fact that I got a real deep appreciation for money and how to work hard for money because mum did that. She worked so hard. And then I got this alternative view as well of once you've worked hard and you've got the cash and you're in a position, this is what money can enable you.
Wicked.
Yeah, it was me. Wicked. And in terms of my husband's whānau, I think it was a bit lighter on the everyday money conversation, engagement with his dad growing up around money. But certainly I think my experiences were with money were deeper. And I think that's really shaped me personally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Because I've seen, you know, as a mortgage advisor, you know, different couples will have different financial backgrounds and then it kind of paints how they interact with their money.
Oh, that'd be so interesting.
Yeah, it's really crazy. It's really crazy. Cool though.
Yeah.
But then they come to me and I'm like, hey, this is, hey, you've just got to understand your financial backgrounds first. And that's why you think that way, and that's why you think that way. And you've got to understand there are differences, and you've got to somehow come to this happy medium with, yeah.
You're kind of like digging into psychology and like, hey.
Oh, I don't want to go. No, yeah, mate, yeah, really in a way, it is kind of that consumer behavior kind of stuff. So, but yeah, I find it really interesting. So that's cool to hear.
I think like when I say I'm more pedantic about money in our relationship, I definitely acknowledge or attribute that to like those early formative years. Yep. Like 0 to 10 sort of thing, where it was role modeled to me that we have to be minding every single cent. And I think that sometimes I catch myself and I'm like, you've got money, you've also got an emergency savings account. Yep. Like, this is not the end of the world, but those habits can be so ingrained, eh?
Yep.
Yeah.
So on that, like, when do you know that you can relax with your money? Because obviously we have those... Oh, I see a lot of people who are like, no, I'm saving, I'm not spending that, which are great habits that they've learned over time. But then when can you relax a bit? Or is that a slippery slope?
I think holistically speaking, yes, of course you can do that. But I do think it depends on your money personality a little bit. Like for me, I have to be really intentional around that. And my husband, he's also pretty thrifty. Oh. So we can get on a slippery slope the other way where we don't spend anything on ourselves or we won't socialize because of there may be a cost like going out to a restaurant. That's stupid. If we can afford it, like we value our friends of honor, we should spend time with them.
Because you've worked hard.
That's it. But I would say like in the bigger scheme of things with when can you relax around money, not those little transactions, but I'm not into wealth hoarding. I never want to be so rich that I don't have a purpose for my money because money... it's zero sum. There's only so much money in our economy. So if I'm hoarding X amount, that means someone else doesn't have Y amount. So like one of my bigger goals as I hit off some of my financial objectives is to make sure that I keep everything in perspective. And I'm a long way off of having that problem to solve. But I do think I always want my money to have a purpose and a purpose greater than me as well.
What's your biggest money mistake or regret that you've had?
I got really into investing. So when I was at uni, I had a job to obviously pay for everything.
Yep.
And I ended up working heaps, like pretty much full time alongside uni. And I'd work like graveyard shifts at the petrol station, that sort of stuff.
Oh wow!
So I had some spare cash, and like my stepdad had taught me a bit about investing. I'm quite a risk seeker, so I go all in on single stocks, like not ETFs or like, so there's some investments you can get, like index funds or ETFs that are a collection of lots of different companies, right?
It's like all the best companies, put them together.
That's
and
it.
You put some money on or money into
them. That's it. Yeah. So for someone starting out, which was definitely me at that time, that would have been a great choice because it reduces the risk. Yes. But of course, I'm like, I'll just put everything on black, you know? And that's kind of gambling at that stage. Some of those came off, but majority of them didn't. So I reckon I lost like thousands of dollars. And I know that in the scheme of things, that may not sound like much, but for a university student, that was heaps on stupid investments that weren't even values aligned. Like I had invested in, I would never invest in it now, but like natural resources, oil and gas and stuff, which I don't believe in that investment philosophy anymore. But yeah, so the financial but also like the values alignment thing.
Yep. Is that a key part of what you invest in today?
Yeah,
like definitely. Just values?
Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
And like there's just a no-go territory. But every company I'll look at them through that lens.
Nice. Yeah. And so you invest in shares? What else do you invest in?
So we have invested in property. Cool. So we managed to hold on to our first house. And then we managed to upgrade to our second house and keep the first one as a rental. That said, we've literally it's gone conditionally sold.
Oh, okay. Nice. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We're hoping to sell both them and move into a forever home.
Worker.
Should we mean? Shares, have opened the odd term deposit.
Yep.
have invested in crypto. Can you call that investing? I don't know. I've owned crypto.
I have to.
Yeah. A little speculative.
Yeah, it is.
Because we don't really know where that future's going. But, I mean, at the moment, you would suggest it's going up.
Yeah, it's on the way up at the moment.
Yep.
Well, maybe until the end of April.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Other than that, I have invested in things, and I don't know if I should use the word investing, but like my hobbies. So I'm really into books and reading.
Cool. Awesome.
So kind of like how sneakerheads buy their shoes. I've bought rare books, which.
Dang.
Yeah, no, it's weird, eh?
Like first edition?
Yeah, first editions. Ah. Or there's even some before first editions that go on new publishers. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I've got a few of them, but in terms of their appreciation, again, it's a bit hit and miss. Some have doubled in value, but some have stayed the same or tanked. Yeah, so, cool. Yeah.
Nice. What's your best savings tip?
Ooh, I think it's just to have a goal and a purpose.
Yep.
So if you have a savings account with no purpose, what's the motivation to put money in there? There's none, so you've got to start with that driver. And then I like to think about savings because my sister's more of a spender than a saver. And what I've told her historically is saving is just spending, but like in a year's time. So if you can think about it that way, like either we spend money today or we spend money in the future.
Yes.
So that mindset.
It's all the only thing, the difference is time.
Exactly. Yeah, nice. Exactly. So that's the biggest thing. Other than that, like there's lots of like tools and techniques you can use, like set up regular APs to just move money out.
Yep.
One of the other big things I do, as soon as my salary comes in, it just zips off to about 10 different accounts, and each account has a different purpose.
So it goes to zero, and it's all gone.
Yep.
So your balance in that the account that where your money hits goes to...
Well, not quite zero. It goes to a fun amount of money, like a few hundred bucks.
Sweet.
And that for the month will be like if I'm going to go out for dinner or do any of that stuff, I can burn that down without guilt. And then, although sometimes I like try and keep it high, which I shouldn't. And then everything else goes out to an account that has a purpose to it, whether it's like fix the broken window or buy a new car or that sort of stuff. Gotcha. Yeah.
What would you say to someone who wanted to get better with money?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
This is really tough. I think it's so personal, right?
Yeah.
The main thing I can say that I hope will resonate with a big group of people is... money isn't as scary as you think it may be, and there's a lot of tools out there to learn about money.
Mm.
And in my experience and in the data that we collect, the biggest barrier to getting better with money is your confidence or lack of confidence. So if you can do anything to boost your personal confidence around managing money,
interesting,
then inherently you will, statistically speaking, get better with money.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's not... necessarily just the logic or the math.
Nah. Most of it isn't.
Yeah.
Most of it's behavioural, like you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or confidence levels.
Yeah. Wow.
The other stuff, like I'm not great at math. The other stuff, interest and all that,
you
can figure it out or you can use AI to figure it out for you.
That's right.
But you need to figure out how you can get more confident and how you can build behaviours that help you move towards your dreams.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And what would your advice be for someone who's looking to start their own tech business?
Find a purpose. Like, it has to be a meaty purpose.
Yeah,
so I found mine, which is about eliminating financial illiteracy, increasing financial equity, changing the intergenerational narrative around money. Like, that is so inspiring to me personally for so many reasons. And it is a personal thing too, eh?
Yeah.
Like, this will resonate, I think, with a few people. Like, when you grow up without much stuff and money, you realize how important money is to us getting ahead.
Mm. Yep.
So you want to change that equation for those who come after you. I suspect that if you don't have something that motivating, you'll probably be like me at my accounting job and you'll quit early on.
When it gets hard or not enjoyable, right?
Yeah. Because it's tough. Like, business, running your own business can be really tough. Yeah, so you need that bigger goal to work for. So find that.
Nice.
And don't fake it. Like, go and actually find it because there's lots of awesome problems for you to solve.
Do you think people, there's a draw card to being like an entrepreneur?
Yeah, 100%.
Or something like that? Like, do you think people just want to do it because that sounds cool?
Yep, Yeah, totally. Like, and maybe I was guilty of that early on, I reckon. Yeah. Like, I probably thought that I'd always wanted to do something in business. And, like, even at uni and maybe at school, I had some, like, little business things, like, you know, earn $100 here and there. But it seems glamorous maybe from the outset or cool.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's just hard work. Yeah. And you, like, make so many sacrifices. Mm. And I look at different paths I could have taken that would earn me way more money, just to be clear, and that would be way easier. But I love what I do, and it's a privilege to be able to choose how I spend my time on this earth, and this is what I would choose.
There's a recent survey by Fidelity Life Insurance came out. And that they're saying that there's 74% of Pacific Islanders, 56% of Māori feel unconfident or unsure when making financial decisions. Why do you think that is?
I think it's, well, how deep do you want to go here? I mean,
as far as you want.
We were colonised. We had an economic system imposed on us. The way that we trade and reciprocity meant something different to us. And what we value is inherently different than our capitalistic society. Like, I don't, I fundamentally, I do money stuff for a living. I don't think money's the most important thing by any means. I think it can help us enhance our values and lead the lives we want for our whānau and our collective. But that's not really how our financial system works. It's quite aggressive. It's quite individualistic. And I don't necessarily think that resonates with us. That's my my journey of it all.
It'd be similar to
Pacifica. So when you have these systems and ways of navigating systems imposed on you that don't align with your values, you're going to reject that. Like, you're going to think that's not for me. I don't see myself in that. I don't have the tools, the skills, the capability. And you have that self-doubt that kicks in. And that's, like, tragic, because then we're excluding ourselves from the system. And so one of the things that I've really enjoyed through my work is rethinking how we can explore that system. We may not be able to change it. Like, it's a big beast, right? But how we think about it and our relationship with it and how we learn to navigate it, we can control that. So I'm not surprised by those statistics. Like, it's devastating that that's the case. I'm not surprised by it. I hope we can see some change in the next few years, because we should, because we should be super confident, because we're epic. We've navigated things far more challenging than a little financial system. And all we need is the self-belief to come along with our capabilities.
Is Banker doing stuff in the Māori, for Māori? In Pacifica?
Not in heaps with Pacifica specifically. Maybe we could kōrero about that later. We work in Kura and Whare Kura with our translated platforms and contextualised platforms. But one of the cool things I've been greenlit to work on over this last, like, 12 months or so is how we can work with our Pākehi, our adult learners. So we're working with a few different iwi and hapu group and Māori entities more broadly, and putting adult learners through this financial education experience, which has just, brought my world, like, on fire a little bit more, because that's where you really get to play with some cool concepts of, well, what does mātauranga money mean for Māori? How can we draw on our tools and our way of thinking to express our finances? It's been really fun.
That's awesome. And your iwi is Ngāi Tahu?
Yes.
Is
that right? Yeah, and Ngāti Kahununu.
Ngāti Kahununu. How supportive have they been of you and Banker?
Super supportive. Obviously, being based down here in Ōtautahi, I probably lean closer to my Ngāi Tahu side of things. They, like, small stuff, like during COVID, as an iwi, they supported Pākehi as well, so businesses that needed it.
Amazing.
It was. And but aside from that, like, they're actually one of our investors now. To think that my whānau own my business is very cool. Like, I think that's what it's all about. And as I grow this business, the value for my whānau grows. So talk about those motivator effects. Other than that, we also, like, work with them in more like a partnership model, and we're exploring again with adult space what we can do with my iwi too. So it's cool to just be able to throw everything in the pot and mix it all up.
Yeah.
Like I think from Kosio being so your husband cool. to getting into bed with your iwi and yeah. I think that's what it's all about though.
It is, eh?
Yeah.
It's about whānau and
yeah.
just everyone being involved and everyone wins
yeah.
at the same time.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Wicked. And so what are your hopes and your dreams for Banker? Is it going global?
Definitely. So we're already yeah. in or, Oz.
Yes.
But going global is definitely an aspiration, or cool. going big, I should say, whatever shape or form that takes. I'm really motivated by Aotearoa-centric outcomes.
Yeah.
So not to say I'm not excited when an Australian kid learns about money. That's cool too. But there's something about making positive change in your own like backyard that's yeah. really motivating. So I'm excited about us doing more work in the adult space. But fundamentally for Banker, it doesn't matter if it's Banker or someone else. I'm just obsessed with this mission, which is intergenerational financial education. So whether we're a big part of that or a little part of it, whether the government comes along and makes it compulsory for everyone and they have their own solution, I don't really mind.
Yeah.
So long as the problem gets solved.
Yeah,
cool. At the moment, though, I think we're kind of a big part of the solution, which is cool.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And personal hopes and dreams?
Ah, for life generally.
Yeah, yep.
Getting that forever home. Yep. That's nice. Like top of mind at the nice. Moment.
So that's some of your financial yep. goals,
that's
right?
a big financial yep. goal for us at cool. the moment. We're sort of doing a lot of sacrifice to make that happen, including living in like a portacom for a year.
Nice.
Which is mean.
Nice.
Our first house was like 45, 50 square metres, so we know small.
Cool.
But this will be like 12 square metres.
That's small, small.
Yeah, yeah. That's small, small, eh? But it should be fun. Other than that, just happy whānau. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, wicked.
Yeah.
Wicked. Well, Kendall, thank you so much for coming on Fresh Money. It's been a joy having you. And no doubt, you know, we'll see Banker continue to thrive and kind of reach those goals that you have of continuing financial wealth for generations. Yeah.
Kilda, thanks for having me.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.